Early in his relationship with Winter, his girlfriend, who would become his wife, Jonathan Pitts said something that years later he realized was just wrong.
So we're 21 years old, and in a moment of weakness where I think it's like an intimate conversation about the future, I just say to her, like, hey, it'll really be hard for me to love you if you ever get fat. And I thought, yeah, it was bad. So the good thing is Winter grew up on the inner city streets of Baltimore, so like it didn't faze her not one bit. Like she was just actually highly offended and gave me a few choice words. But it really exposed like this idolatry that I had and this image consciousness and yuckiness.
This is Family Life Today. Our hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. I'm Bob Lapine. When we're young, we still have a lot to learn about healthy relationships and a lot to learn about how we give grace to one another when we blow it. We'll hear more about that today from Jonathan Pitts. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. We've talked a little bit about this. You're not both loud in conflict, right?
My wife's a lot louder than I am, Bob. A lot louder.
Have you gotten louder over the years?
Oh, have I gotten louder?
Yeah.
I don't know, honey. I'm getting pretty loud right now. I have my moments, you know, but she's a fiery little pepper pot over there.
I'm hearing these quiet women. I'm like, oh, I wish I was that. But I'm not.
Well, part of the reason I'm asking is because we've got Jonathan Pitts joining us again today. Jonathan, welcome back to Family Life Today.
Thanks for having me.
Jonathan is an executive pastor of Church of the City in Nashville, Tennessee. It's a group of churches, a family of churches in Nashville and in New York City. Jonathan is a speaker, he's a writer, and he and his wife, Winter, who, as we've already shared this week, went to be with the Lord last year, right before she went home, they wrote a book called Emptied, Experiencing the Fullness of a Poured Out Marriage. And you are both loud?
No, I'm loud, and she preferred me not to be loud. And she was actually – Winter was really quiet, and she had very few words. When she spoke, my sisters would describe it as when Winter would speak, you would listen, because if she spoke, she meant to speak, and it wasn't just rambling. I didn't appreciate it, nor did I realize it early on, like that her speaking was – typically more wise than mine was, because I'll just fill the room with noise and anyway.
I can relate to that. Dave and I would be in meetings. No.
You're saying I fill the noise?
No, I fill the noise. And so we're in a meeting and I'm saying all this stuff and Dave's quiet and then he'll say this one thing and the whole room is like, oh, that was so good.
That never happens in my house. It only happened in meetings somewhere else.
It wasn't that way at home.
Your early relationship, did conflict show up early?
Yeah, it showed up early and often in our early relationship. Yeah, and it typically looked like me trying to force a conversation and her trying to withdraw from that conversation. And it was probably a conversation that needed to happen, but my tone was not one that was helpful to her. And she grew up, her dad was a drug addict. She grew up with her mom and her grandmom in a house. And her mom and her grandmom both gave their lives to the Lord in 1979, the year before she was born. Wow. And so she grew up in a Christian home, very warm environment, inner city of Baltimore, lots of craziness going on around her home, but in her home it was warm. But there was no father figure in there. So like even the nature of that voice for her wasn't one that she was used to in marriage. So it was something like one I had to learn to kind of bring my tone down, because I grew up in a family, twin brother, three sisters, everybody's fighting and jockeying for position, you know? And so we had two very different environments. So that was a struggle early on, was just figuring out how to communicate well.
Those two different backgrounds, you knew before you got married that you were bringing two civilizations together under one roof, but you probably could not have imagined what that would lead to as you tried to make that merger happen.
Yeah, no. I mean, we just got in very naively, I think. And, you know, it's kind of funny because we were writing this book, and one of the stories that came out, we were in a hotel for a couple of nights just really doing some focus time, and she walks out and she says, read this story. And I'm like, so I start reading it. And her grandmom, who, although she was a Christian, she didn't think much about, like, what her granddaughter was watching on television. So like in 1989, the movie Pretty Woman is out and they watch Pretty Woman. Maybe it's 1990. And the point of the story is she's telling, like, her idea of what a husband was Richard Gere in Pretty Woman, who I've never even seen the movie, but I know Richard is loving a prostitute, right?
That's
her reality of what she thought a man would be all that Richard Gere was in Hollywood.
He just buys things and takes care of.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Just, and so that was, I just started cracking up in the hotel because I'm thinking, like, that's what you thought I was going to be.
Did you not bring that?
She was a spoiled girl, she'd say it herself, but I learned to spoil her and appreciate spoiling her. But I was no Richard Gere, that's for sure. And she was not what I wanted, which was my mom, who my mom is a godly woman. But Winter was not my mom, nor was she trying to be my mom. So that was the difference. That just spells it out.
Yeah, so I love the honesty in your book. I mean, immediately I'm like, this is a couple that's going to let us in their marriage. Slamming doors, fights, you know, the whole thing. And the story early in your marriage where she got lost. Tell that.
Well, Winter, she wasn't a girl that was really good at, like, following directions or even knowing where she was. In fact, she hated South Jersey, which is a really rural part of South Jersey, because there's no street lights and there's circles and all this stuff. So, you know, she leaves because of a fight and gets out of the house. And the reality was she didn't know where she was going. So she has to call me for directions to get home. And for me, leaving wasn't an option. I think for Winter, like, it was kind of fight or flight kind of a deal. Like, she grew up, her dad left, and that was one of the struggles she had early in marriage. But it wasn't for me. Like, I watched my parents, who have now been married 45 years, I think, something like that. So just this reality of, like, the commitment that marriage is, and there's going to be intenseness there, there's going to be all that, but leaving's never an option. So I actually remember another story where we're fighting and I leave, but I wasn't leaving to leave forever. I was leaving just to leave to blow off some steam. And I get down the road, and as I'm walking, like, two coyotes walk right in front of me. And I'm like, I'm going back to the house. So it's like, God's going to get you back however he has to.
How did you work that out when one of you would kind of shut down? Winter was more quiet, so mm-hmm. she would get quiet. Did that frustrate you? And how did you guys work that out?
Yeah, I mean, early on it would frustrate me, and I just keep trying to assert myself and force myself. And not like horrible ways, but just not in a way that was mature.
Push her.
So what I learned was just to really walk away, give her space, let her breathe, and actually de-escalate my emotional energy. Because Winter was very sensitive to emotional energy. And like, if I was coming with that, like, even my intensity I talk with right now, like, I just have that about me. So I had to learn to temper that. And the more I did, the more she would receive anything that I had to offer. And she also had to learn to kind of step up to the table even when she didn't want to. Yeah. And so it was we met in the middle, typically.
The title of your book is Emptied, and the big idea is that for marriage to work, we have to go through this process, this ongoing process of emptying the us, not the us, the me, empty the me out of the relationship so that we can love one another better. In a moment like this, where there's conflict and one's walking out or the other's walking out, that's where you have to pull back and go, where's the selfishness in that? Where's the me that is the problem, and how do I empty that? So we're talking to people who have been in conflict in the last 24 hours, who have maybe not recognized the me in the middle of that. What do they do when they're in those moments? How do you drain the me out so you can be emptied?
The book is really based on Philippians 2:7. And, you know, it's, although Jesus was equal with God, he didn't take his equality with God as something to be grasped, but became a servant, humbled himself to the point of obedience and death on a cross. Like, it's kind of taken from this idea of Jesus, who had every right to stay kind of up here, basically comes down to meet somebody that didn't deserve to be met in us, you know? And so the idea is to be Christ-like is actually to get rid of anything that would be any reason or any excuse as to why we can't come down to meet in any relationship, really, but specifically in marriage, to meet our spouses. And honestly, like, the goal is emptying ourselves of, because we found a couple things that we'd be full of that needed to be emptied. The first was sin, like, just sin we brought into our marriage, ugly sin, just sin. Like, we're human, we all bring it in. History, which we all bring in, and then expectations, which we all bring in. So how do you begin to empty yourselves of those things in order to be filled up and to be filled up with the Spirit? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. You know, for me, like, self-control was one of those, self-control is probably one of the harder things to really fully understand the value of, especially like if you're in a fight and you're trying to preserve the me. Self-control is typically thinking about more than just yourself. It's the we, you know, so it's being filled up with the fruit of the Spirit, which God can't do if you're full of all this other stuff and all these reasons as to why you can't.
So talk to the person, and it'd probably be me, that is going, okay, I want to empty. I value what you're saying. I'm like, I do want to empty myself and get rid of the me and love her and love anybody the way they deserve, but I can't. I just get stuck. How do I empty myself?
Yeah, well, first, it's like we end the book by talking about just this reality that you can only do it looking at Jesus, like looking unto Jesus, the author and perfecter of your faith. Like, you literally have to look to him as the solution. Because in terms of, like, the world, we can all do marriage pretty okay. But to do what God's asked us to do and become a we, like, that's not happening without Jesus. So I would say leaning into Jesus first and foremost. It's just the nature of, like, the task that we're being asked to do, we can't do alone. So I would say lean into God.
Well, one of your chapter titles is called God's Kingdom Purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And you say our marriages are about building God's kingdom.
Yeah.
What does that mean? What's that look like?
Yeah, so the reality of your marriage, my marriage, is just not about us at all. It's all about God. It's his story that we get to participate in. So one of the things that Winter and I really, not only in our marriage, but also as we raised our kids, is have this perspective that our marriage isn't about us. Our life isn't about us. Our kids aren't about us. It's all about God's purposes. And when you do that, you actually begin to let go of some of the expectations that you have for you, because you realize you're not there for you in the first place, you know? And so when you're serving your own needs in marriage, like, you're wondering, what do you get out of it? When you're serving God's purposes in marriage, you're realizing that you're a servant, like, you're there for him. So it just changes your perspective just a little bit.
Well, and I have to tell you, this has been one of those ahas for me. You'd think after almost 40 years of marriage, I'd have gotten this quicker. But I talked about this recently. In fact, we're going to hear this on Family Life Today in coming weeks. But I talked about the fact that the first phase of our marriage, I was thinking, okay, am I happy?
Mm-hmm.
It's the number one question. Am I happy? And then I recognize the Bible doesn't ask that question. It says, is your wife happy? Are you serving her? Are you emptying yourself and serving her? So phase two was, okay, I need to make sure Marianne's happy. And I spent a lot of time thinking, if what I'm doing is making Marianne happy, then God's pleased, because I'm supposed to die to self and serve her. And then all of a sudden I woke up and went, no, the real question is not, am I happy or is she happy? The question is God happy?
Mm.
Are we living our marriage so that at the end of the day, he can go, I'm pleased with what's going on here. Now, sometimes him being pleased means one of the two of us is not happy.
Yeah. Mm.
Because our toes are getting stepped on. That's not where I wanted to go. That's not the direction. But ultimately, if we both agree, that's what we want to make happen. We want God to be happy with our marriage. So that brings both of us back into alignment. When things are out of alignment, we can say, okay, God's not pleased with us being out of alignment because he wants oneness in our marriage. So what are we doing? How do we recalibrate so that he's pleased with what's going on here?
Yeah. I think it takes it back to purpose. So, like, you think about the scripture that says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. Like, Jesus didn't just come just to kind of hang out. Like, he had a purpose in coming to earth. And for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. So he went through all the things he had to go through in order to accomplish the purpose that he came for. And I think the same is true in marriage. Like, if we have this perspective that we're not looking for our own happiness and our spouse isn't looking for their own happiness, but we're both looking for joy that comes with the purpose of serving whatever purpose God's given us, then one, it just gives us more energy for the struggle, because there is struggle involved, and it's going to come with God's grace. But it ends with joy. Like, right now, like, I don't look at my book, I don't look at my marriage, I don't look at what we had and think about what's ended. I think about the joy that God gave us in the struggle, like, working through, like, day by day. And we were doing that to the end. Like when you think about, we were in the middle of moving, so, like, even our last couple of weeks together, like, there was times of, like, intense struggle about the kids' school and the house, and, like, life was happening. But there's joy that God's given me in realizing that in all of it, we were thinking about his purposes first. Like, even our move was about his purposes, you know, where our kids were going to school. We were asking God, like, what's, you know, where do you want them? Like, so I just think thinking about God's purpose will change your perspective on anything, everything else, and it'll diminish the me.
And what conflicts with that, that me that's in us, comes from patterns from the past,
mm-hmm.
comes from our own flesh that wars. You recognized this early on when you went out for donuts back when you were dating.
You know, what's funny is that Winter will still, she would still say that she was right in that argument.
So
there, you want to tell the story?
Yeah.
Krispy Kreme was a thing when we were in college.
Yeah.
We went to Drexel University in Philadelphia, and the closest Krispy Kreme was in Wilmington, Delaware. It's probably about an hour's drive, a little less than that. So we drive down to Wilmington to get Krispy Kreme, and we get there, and she wants a donut. I want a donut. We get the hot donuts, hot and ready. I think it's her sign.
Yeah, the
light was on. So we get donuts, and she says, do you want to get some to go? And I'm like, oh, no, I'm good. And then she says, oh, I'm going to get a half dozen. So she gets her half dozen. We make our way back to Philadelphia, and we go just to kind of hang out at her apartment. We get to her apartment, and she goes to eat another donut. I'm like, oh, well, let me have one of those. And she's like, no. And I'm like, what do you mean no? Like, she's like, no, these are my donuts. Like, I'm like, you have six of them. You don't need six donuts. And it was just funny because it was our first argument. Like, I was actually really offended that she wouldn't, but she still would say, I asked you.
Didn't want any. Exactly.
Oh, that was the earliest fight, an indication that we were two very different people.
But it's also an indication that we bring patterns from the past, and you can see where, with her background, which you've already described, growing up in a tough place without a dad, where maybe you keep protected.
Self-preserve.
Yeah, you protect what's yours. You grew up in a family where, hey, if it's here, it's ours.
My mom split a Snickers bar five ways for us kids. There were five of us, and we didn't have a ton of money, so she has stories of splitting a Snickers.
Well, that makes sense why you'd want that donut.
Exactly.
So we bring patterns in, and then we just bring our own passions and the flesh that says, I want what I want, and I don't care what you want. Get out of my way. That's what's got to be emptied for there to be a oneness that happens in marriage, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. I mean, I don't know if this has anything to do with donuts, but the comment in your book about what you said, if you get fat, I mean, you said the no-no of all no-nos to a woman.
Jonathan.
Yeah, I documented it in the book, and I've said it on several interviews, so I might as well just come out and share it. But what I realized early on in marriage for me is that the idolatry of, like, this image of what I wanted my family to be. So I grew up, I'm mixed. My mom's German, my dad's black. I grew up in a neighborhood in a town where that wasn't normal. So I just wanted to fit in. So, like, anything I could do to fit in was what I wanted to do. So for me, like, even, like, looking good, being in shape was just not looking different, not standing out. So we're 21 years old. We're sitting on her apartment steps, same apartment where she wouldn't give me a donut. And she, winter was not a day in her life over like 120. She's just a tiny little girl. Like, so this is how you know, like, something is a stronghold. It was a stronghold for me. Like, so we're sitting there in a moment of weakness where I think it's like an intimate conversation about the future. I just say to her, like, hey, it'll really be hard for me to love you if you ever get fat. And I thought, yeah, you can. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was bad. So the good thing is, Winter grew up on the inner city streets of Baltimore. So, like, it didn't faze her not one bit. Like, she was just actually highly offended and gave me a few choice words, but it really exposed, like, this idolatry that I had and this image consciousness and yuckiness.
What did you, do you remember what she said when you said that?
I don't remember exactly what she said. It was pretty colorful, but
but she didn't just go, okay.
Well, no, I mean,
I'll try not to.
In the moment, no, not at all. In the moment, it became a big argument, but really what would happen is, you know, trust is one of those things that can be, it's built up over years, but it's broken in a moment. And so what that did was it broke trust at a certain level. And for a girl that, like, already struggled with, am I loved? You know, her dad's gone. Like, just the classic things that would happen for a girl that has a dad that's a drug addict that leaves. Like, she was dealing with that. And so this man comes into her life that's supposed to love her unconditionally, and he gives her the first condition.
Yeah.
And so that would be something that would take, honestly, years for us to work out, like a few years for us to work out. And for me, it was working out the idolatry in my own heart that would work itself out in little things like monitoring, you know, what she's eating. And I mean, when strongholds come, and every listener has them, so they'll recognize what that is in their life. When they come, like, they come with actual, real, tangible things. You might shut down emotionally. You might say something. You might, you know, get a little funky attitude. Whatever it is, like, whatever those strongholds are, they come, and they come with real implications. So for me, it was, how do I trust God enough to let go of that thing, my condition? And for her, it was, how do I trust this guy again after he basically told me he has a condition for loving me? You know, it was horrible. So the beautiful thing is, I can document it because we got completely past that, and my wife knew that I loved her unconditionally.
But here's the check I think all of us have to do, because in the back of our minds, are there conditions?
Yeah.
Do we withhold affection if you're not performing at the level that's acceptable to us? And it may not be weight related. It may be, did you do your chores right? Or did you take care of this? Or did you say the right things?
Are you talking to me? Are you communicating? I think we all have those conditions that we're not even aware of. And I think it's a great point that you're going deeper into it. Why do I have those conditions, and where do they come from? Many of us never go there.
Yeah, that was so deeply rooted in me. I actually remember seeing, I was in like the, let's see, ninth grade. And I remember, I think I talk about it in the book, but I remember my one of my football coaches kind of walking by, and I didn't really know him that well, but his wife worked at the school as well. And his wife had just had a baby. And so she just had a baby. And I remember, and he was like this studly looking guy. I remember thinking to myself, like, I don't ever want that to happen to me. Like, how immature of, like, a ninth grade kid to think, I don't want my wife to look like she looks after having a baby. So like it was like the enemy, like in an instant, like dropped that strong. That's the first memory I have of thinking something like that. But they come for all of us in different ways, and typically they come in childhood from other hurts and woundings.
And many of us women have those exact same fears that we won't be loved if that does happen. And so that can become a stronghold. And even one of those fears that we carry, what if I look like this or this happens or I get pregnant, will my husband still love me?
So everybody speak to this. What do we do to, first of all, see if there are strongholds like that in our marriage, if there are conditions that we just subconsciously put on affection or love? And then what do we do when we recognize that's there and yet we still want it done, and I'm not pleased if you're not acting or talking or being this way? How do I deal with that if that's the reality? You got an answer for that?
For me, I remember Tony Evans, who's a mentor of mine, saying that faith is acting like God is telling the truth. So when you face a moment where you have to like muster up faith, it's like basically act like God's telling the truth. So for me, acting like God was telling the truth early on in marriage was that if I let go of this condition and love my wife like Christ loved the church, that there is reward in that for me, and that God will give me everything that it takes to do that. And so for me, practically speaking, it was like when those moments would come, you know, it's like Paul's talking about basically taking your thoughts captive. It's literally like leaning in. When I feel like leaning back, it's leaning in and loving my wife more, showing her affection, even when my like all of my flesh is telling me not to show her affection. And it's kind of crazy, but strongholds can be like that. So acting like God is telling the truth and leaning in when you feel like leaning back, that's what I'd say.
And I think what marriage does is our spouse can push buttons and trigger us into not even knowing a stronghold has been there.
That's true.
Or even a lie has been planted in our head. I know that I have some times, my dad was a baseball coach. And so the whole baseball team was sitting in our living room, and I had to walk through that as a 9-year-old girl. Felt very awkward and very conscious of walking through there. And I remember my dad, it was very quiet, and he said, "Boys, this is my daughter. And when she starts filling out her clothes, she's going to be a looker."
Oh, wow.
And so what does that say to me? Is that, oh, if that doesn't happen, or if I don't look a certain way, then I won't be attractive. So that was there. I had another time in high school, I think I was 16, and I heard a girl, one of my friends, talking to her mother, and she didn't know I was in the room, but I heard her say, "Anne is really ugly." This is what the daughter said to her mom, and her mom said, "I know, but at least she tries hard." And so when Dave would tell me things like, "Oh, you look so good," I would say, "No, I don't." And I think what you're talking about is even in your mind, we play things over and over in our mind about ourselves, about our spouse. And sometimes I think taking that thought captive and looking at it and asking, where did this come from? Is this true? And does God say this about me?
And I would hear Anne make these comments. And for probably a decade, I was so dense. I never realized that's a stronghold in her life. I was always, initially I was
You get mad at me.
I'd get mad. How's that for a terrible response? But I'd be like, "What do you mean you're not pretty? You're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. You know that. I know that. Let's move on." That was my response in my immaturity. Now I look back, there were symptoms over and over that she was crying out, "This is a stronghold. This is what I really believe." And so it's really cool now as a husband to come alongside and go, I can be the one to be the voice of God.
Yeah,
I can go, like you said, go to the Word of God, say, this is your identity, and speak it and give life continually. And that's what you did, and that's what Winter did with you. And it's a beautiful thing in a marriage to be able to say, no, that's not true, in a gentle way. Because if you yell at it, it just, that's what I did. Now it's more gentle to say, no, this is what's true. And hopefully that lands and demolishes the stronghold.
And if we have a spouse that doesn't do that for us, we have a father that continually is speaking life into us through his word. He continually tells us that we're fearfully and wonderfully made. If we didn't have the word of God, I would feel so lost and empty, because he's continually encouraging us to listen to the truth of who he says we are.
Well, to get to where we're talking about getting unconditional love and affirmation of others and dealing with things from the past, you got to start by being emptied. You got to start by saying, okay, this isn't about me. And both of you together be pursuing, how do we please God in our marriage? That's what's at the heart of the book Emptied that Jonathan and his wife Winter have written. We've got copies of the book in our Family Life Today Resource Center. You can order it from us online at familylifetoday.com. Or if you'd like to call to order, the number is 1-800-FL-TODAY. Again, our website is familylifetoday.com. Our toll-free number is 1-800-358-6329. 1-800 F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. Ask about the book Emptied when you get in touch with us. You know, some great thoughts on our marriages today from Jonathan and David Robbins, who's the president of Family Life, is here with us. And, of course, we're thinking about marriage a lot here at Family Life. Did you hear anything that jumped out at you today?
Yeah, I want to revisit what Jonathan said when he said, to be Christ-like in a marriage would be to get rid of any reason or excuse why we couldn't empty ourselves to serve one another. And what grabs me in that definition that I've never really thought about is the word excuse. I think a lot of us are familiar with the biblical call to empty ourselves and to serve those around us and certainly our spouse. But when rubber meets the road in our lives, how often does what amounts to an excuse prevent me from doing something and serving others? For me, I can make the excuse of timing. This just is not the right time. I make that excuse a lot. Or I'm already focused on something that's too important, and this just can't take over that. Or this season of our kids is so demanding. Let's, you know, push aside emptying ourselves to one another and empty ourselves out for their sake. And the reality is those things are real. And we do have our limitations, but I just think today I'm reminded, how can we go to the Lord and ask ourselves if I'm making those things excuses and if he wants me to rearrange and surrender anything?
There's a parable. Jesus told a parable about people making excuses, didn't he?
Yeah, Luke 14. I mean, that is a parable of the feast where the invitations go out and Jesus gives the example of three different people invited to the feast of the king, and they all make different excuses of something they need to tend to first or something more important.
Right.
And that's totally what I do. And they missed out on the feast with the king, and I think often we miss out. And I just say, what if we took Jonathan's definition to heart and took seriously our call to surrender to Jesus and to empty ourselves of the excuses that keep us from serving our spouse?
And how can we intentionally serve one another in marriage? What are some practical ways we can live that out? That's good for us to chew on. Thank you, David. You know, our hope here at Family Life is that every day, as you listen to this program, you find practical, biblical help and hope for your marriage and your family. We want to talk about things that are going to make a difference in your home. We want to effectively develop godly marriages and families, because those godly marriages and families can change the world one home at a time. And all that we do here happens because listeners like you embrace that mission along with us and say, I want to be a part of helping to make that happen in my city, in my community, in our world. I think this is an important goal. I want to make sure Family Life Today continues on my local radio station. I want my neighbors and friends to be able to hear it. I want to have access to it through the app or online. You make all of those things possible when you make a donation to help support the work of Family Life Today. In fact, those of you who are monthly legacy partners, we want to say a special thank you to you for your ongoing monthly support. This month, we've had some friends of the ministry who have come to us and offered to match every donation we receive in the month of May on a dollar-for-dollar basis up to a total of $645,000. So if you make a donation today, your donation will be matched. If you become a legacy partner today and agree to make a donation each month, every donation you make over the next 12 months is going to be matched dollar for dollar, as long as there are still funds in that matching gift fund. In addition, if you become a legacy partner today, we're going to send you a thank you gift, and that's a gift card so that you and your spouse or friends of yours, maybe somebody you know getting married this summer, the gift card will cover the registration fee for you or for them to attend one of our Weekend to Remember Marriage getaways. That gift card is our way of expressing our gratitude to you for your partnership with this ministry. So if you can help with the donation today, help us take advantage of this matching gift opportunity. If you want to become a legacy partner today, go to familylifetoday.com. All the information's available there. You can donate online or call to donate. 1-800-FL-TODAY is our number. It's 1-800-358-6329. 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. Now, tomorrow we want to talk more about what it looks like to have an emptied out life and marriage and how that does bring fullness both in marriage and in your own soul. Jonathan Pitts will join us again tomorrow. Hope you can be back with us as well. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a Crew ministry. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.